Welcome, everybody. I'm going to kick off as early as I possibly can because there's a lot to get through. I'm going to be talking to you today about Team Foundation Server extensibility and your integration options with Team Foundation Server. So this is the internet. No, it's not actually. This is what I used to think Team Foundation Server was, a black box, right? A couple of inputs, you can see one on the side there, a couple of switches, some lights. Essentially this thing that you could use and it would do its stuff inside it and then give you out a response. But there was no real way in, or certainly not to plug into the internals of it to find out what was going on or to do your own thing when you got to it. So what this led to was a couple of things. Developers would tend to use this tool a little bit reluctantly, you know? It didn't really fit their purpose. It didn't really fit what they wanted to do. So what they do, what they do is they do their work and then they kind of force their process into Team Foundation Server and then come out again, and maybe there'd be some double entry every now and then and all that kind of stuff. Managers especially, they didn't want to use TFS at all, particularly because, you know, they didn't want to install Visual Studio or Team Explorer or hack around with getting Excel to talk to it and things like that. They wanted to use Microsoft Project, and that's, you can integrate that with Team Foundation Server and that does work well, but it's a little bit tricky. It's not the way they wanted to work. The agile managers, of course, just wanted to use Post-its. They didn't want to use any of these tools. On the other side as well, you've got your guys on the phones taking phone calls from your clients. They don't want to use Team Foundation Server. They want to use Jira or an alternative to Jira. I don't know any alternatives. They want to use something else, right? So if you force them to use Team Foundation Server, even with the really nice Team Web Access, the Web Access stuff that you have now, it's still, you know, you're forcing them to use this application that they don't want to use. So really that meant that nobody was really happy. Developers, yeah, they could get used to it. That was fantastic. It managed their source code. It was great, especially now with Git. But everybody else, you know, you end up with entry into Jira, then somebody puts it into TFS, and then your manager asks you to print out the burn down, glances at it, doesn't understand it, puts it on the pile. So it's really this black box that nobody was really using. But then when I started looking a little bit closer at Team Foundation Server, I looked on the other side that you can't see here, and I saw this. There's all these extensibility points, all of these points where Team Foundation Server lets you plug in, pull out information, put new information in, and so on. And what this means as a developer is it means that you can talk to TFS and build that into your process. It means that if somebody wants to use Jira or your own internal system for managing tickets, you can integrate that really seamlessly with Team Foundation Server. And the more I looked at it, the more I realized how powerful these extensibility points were. There's a lot that you can do. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about these extensibility points. Before I go much further, my name's Damien Brady. I'm an MVP in Visual Studio ALM, MSTS and MCSD, MBA, OMG, WTF, barbecue, all of these things. I'm the Chief Architect and State Manager of Queensland for a company called SSW. We do a lot of training and dev work in Australia. And most recently, or very recently, I co-authored this book, Professional Team Foundation Server 2013. And that's really where the trigger for this talk came from. There's a chapter in there, I think it's chapter 27. You'd think I would know. I wrote that chapter. And it's about Team Foundation Server extensibility. Now, unfortunately, that chapter was due before Microsoft released the REST APIs and the service hooks. So the current chapter that's in the book is all about the client object model and the server object model, which I'm going to talk about. But these days, you should be looking at the REST APIs and the service hooks. We'll talk about them in a bit more depth. So I have this book to give away as well, if I remember to give it away to somebody who asked me a question this time. So we'll do that. In terms of my job, I spend a lot of time in TFS and training teams in Scrum, mentoring teams, and on the other side of the fence, I spend a lot of time on the tools writing Web API and ASP.NET and HTML and JavaScript and all of that good stuff. Okay. So when I'm going to talk about extending Team Foundation Server today, I'm going to talk about it from four different extensibility points, really. We're talking about notifications, which is something happens in TFS and you get a notification so your code can do something else. Interception, which is very much the same, except that you have the ability to change what happens as a result of that event. So you can change the outcome. And then obviously reading and writing, pretty straightforward. You can get information from TFS and you can put information in. So that's what we're going to look at there. With notification, we can do that with the server object model and service hooks, which we'll talk about. Interception currently is only the server object model, so that's where you can make changes yourself. And reading and writing are both available with the client object model and the REST APIs. We'll explain all of these things as we go through. I really want to focus as much as I can on the new shiny stuff, which is the REST APIs and the service hooks. So I'm going to talk about the client object model and the server object model because they definitely have their place, but then I want to get through that quickly and talk about the new shiny stuff because that's why you come to TechEd, for the new shiny stuff. All right, so let's have a look at the client object model. So this is how you read and write from TFS, and this has been around for a long time, this ability. So what this essentially is just a set of assemblies that expose objects in TFS. This is the number one integration method that anybody uses from a third-party application. So if your third-party application wants to talk to TFS, traditionally this has been the way that you do it. And it is used by everything. And when I say everything, I don't just mean, you know, this plugin that you have for Outlook or a plugin for Jira or something like that. I mean Visual Studio and Team Explorer, if you remember this guy. Visual Studio uses these assemblies. So they're making available to you exactly the same integration tools as they use to talk to Team Foundation Server. So that should give you a bit of a hint about how powerful this is. If you want to look at this SDK, and this is actually a link for the server object model as well, this is kind of your entry point to all of these object models. So there's a lot of assemblies that they give you access to, but here's four that I tend to use most frequently. There's the Team Foundation client, which is kind of your base one that you have to use. There's the version control client, Git client, and work item tracking client. They're pretty, you know, straightforward, pretty obvious what they will do. And generally, the way you work with the object model, sorry, client object model is like this. So here's an example. We want to get the latest change set, right? So step one, we connect to TFS. So we do that by instantiating one of these TFS team project collections. There's a couple of these objects that you can use, but this is the main one. Next thing, you ask that object to get you a service. So here we're asking for a version control server because we're dealing with version control. And this is Team Foundation version control. There's a different one for Git in a different assembly. And then we call some methods on it. So here we're getting the latest change set ID, and then we're getting the latest change set from that change set ID. Pretty straightforward, right? There's not a lot of code in that. Just to put it in perspective how much access you have to this, that version control server class that we've got there, it's one of about 360 classes that are in the Team Foundation version control client DLL. One of about 360. That class itself has nearly 200 methods that you can call on it. So I'm not going to say anything about how that relates to things like the single responsibility principle, but it does give you a scope of how much is available to you through the client object model. This is Frank. If anybody was in my talk on Wednesday, you would have recognized Frank. Frank unfortunately lost his job to release management for Visual Studio. But Frank's landed on his feet. Frank now runs a sports portal website. And he's our product owner, and he's really good actually. He enjoys being a product owner. He's a very good one. And he's come to us with a unique problem. Every time he updates apps on his, you know, unnamed tablet, he notices that in the comments of what's changed, there's always this performance improvement and bug fixes and stuff like that. He doesn't want to publicize the bug fixes, but he would like, in his application, in the sports portal, he would like to see performance improvements in every one of them. Totally reasonable request, right? We actually get our release notes from our check-in comments. So he wants to make sure that all the check-in comments have performance improvement in them. So we said, yeah, great, okay, we can do that. Let's just write a little console app to do that work. So this is what it would look like. And the first few steps you've already seen, I showed you how to do that. So we're connecting to our team project collection. We're asking for a version control server, and then we're getting the latest change set ID and then the latest change set. The bit that I didn't show you is this. It's got a comment property on this object you've got, and you can add performance improvement to it and then call update, and it will write to Team Foundation Server. And that's it. That's all you have to do. So we wrote this little application that went through all of our check-ins and added performance improvement to it. A little bit more sensible than this, but you can see how easy that is. So Frank's very happy. We'll see more about Frank in a minute. So this is great. Client object model, fantastic. You know, wonderful thing to use. There are some upsides and downsides to it. So I want to highlight these each time we talk about one of these options. The best thing about it is incredibly powerful. Like you could do the maths and work out exactly what's made available to you. And remember, everything uses it. So it's going to be everything that Visual Studio can do with Team Foundation Server is essentially available to you. It's fast. It's not going to get faster than the way that Visual Studio or Team Explorer will integrate with Team Foundation Server. So it's about as fast as you can get with a client application. It is easy to work with. I mean, I didn't have to make that font size very small to get a complete working program in there. So it is pretty easy to work with, and there's a lot of documentation. MSDN has all of this stuff documented, so you can find it quite quickly. And if you start at that starting point, it'll point you at some reasonable articles, that link that I posted before. The other good thing is you can do this against on-premises and Visual Studio Online instances. Now, I put a little asterisk there because we all know that Visual Studio Online is updated every 14 seconds, and that makes it a little bit difficult. It just means that while you have an on-premises system, you know which version you're targeting. With Visual Studio Online, you've got to be right up to date. It's generally going to be fine, though. And you can actually use like the 2013 assemblies to talk to a 2010 server, but sometimes it doesn't work. Methods have changed and responses are different. As a result of being so powerful, it's potentially quite dangerous. Can anybody see a problem with that example I just gave you? Anybody think there's something a little bit weird with that? No? What was that? It'll append it every time. Yeah, what was it? We're overriding the comment? Yeah, that's what I was getting at. I'm overriding that check-in comment. I could have just totally removed that check-in comment. And change set comments are not versioned. If I wrote that code wrong and ran it in production, I could have just wiped all of the comments that everybody's checked in. Hence, potentially dangerous. It does let you do some things you should not be able to do. Anyway, I've mentioned the version inconsistencies. You can use the 2013 assemblies to talk to 2010 and so on, but sometimes it'll be a little bit different, so you've got to be a bit careful about your what you're targeting. There are ways to handle that. I won't go through them now. Even though there's a lot of documentation, it's not that easy to find full working examples. So it's the kind of documentation that says, here is a class and here's the 200 methods and one sentence description of what they are. But unless you'd seen this before, you might not know that you have to ask the TFS Team Project Collection object to give you a service using that generic method. So yes, a lot of documentation, but not a lot of walkthrough online. Okay, that's the client object model. I want to move on because we want to get to the cool stuff. So let's look at the server object model. This gives us notifications and interceptions. So I talked about what they were before. Now, while the client object model is the way of talking to Team Foundation Server from your client application, the server object model is the way of talking to Team Foundation Server from the server, from the Team Foundation Server itself. So it kind of runs as part of the TFS process. It's implemented, or the way you work with it is kind of a plug-in model. So step one, you implement an interface that Team Foundation Server knows about. Step two, you compile it and you drop it in a folder. And there is no step three. TFS will pick it up and it'll put it in the pipeline where it belongs. And that's all you need to do. Once again, many out-of-the-box features are implemented as plugins, as server object model plugins. So I don't know whether you can read that text, but this is the folder that you put this stuff in or put some of these things in. And there's like lab servers and web access agile DLLs and things like that. Team Room, There's a DLL in there for the team room. So I haven't decompiled many of these, but in general, they'll do exactly the same thing that you're allowed to do. So once again, they're opening it wide open for you. And once again, there's the link to the start page for those object models. All right, so, and again, there's a lot of things you can do with this. Here's some examples of some useful ones. So iSubscriber, this is an interface that you would implement to subscribe to events. So there's two kind of categories of events, two types of events. There's notification events and decision events. A notification event is Team Foundation Server saying, this thing has happened. Do what you will. A decision event is, this thing is happening. Would you like to change some data or reject that request or whatever? So there's a lot of stuff you can do with that, and I'll show you a demo of that in a sec. If you step even further down, there's iTeam Foundation Request Filter. Now, you might know that the way everything communicates with Team Foundation Server under the covers is done over HTTP or HTTPS. This gives you access to that traffic. Now, if you're like me and you're a web developer, you see this and you go, oh my God, we can do anything we want. We could intercept all of the team room traffic and reject it, send it to HipChat or something. Or, you know, you could put entirely new functions on TFS. So you're still hitting the TFS server, but it's a new request that TFS doesn't know about, but we can store that data and do it somewhere else. So this gives you access to absolutely everything. There's also the iTeam Foundation job extension. So the other thing that Team Foundation Server will do is frequently run jobs. So periodically it'll do things like, traditionally this is the most common ones have been things like building up your data warehouse so you can generate the reports that your manager will never read. That runs periodically. Syncing from from Active Directory and things like that. All of these cleanup tasks and so on. So if there's a cleanup task that you want, or maybe just some dashboard that you have over here that you want to update periodically, you can create a job to just run that every now and then. Just like the Team Foundation Server jobs. There's a couple of others I want to mention. iSecurity Namespace Extension and iIdentity Provider. Now, you might be able to guess what they do. If you would like to implement those and chuck them in, then good luck to you. Make sure you're not doing it on production. They are scary and you should avoid them. Stick to the top three. So Frank's back. And he was originally happy with what we did, but now he wants us to, like, he said, that's fantastic when you did it, but it's about 2 months later now and your developers have been forgetting to put this performance improvements. And so obviously our customers have been telling us that the performance has slowed down. So I want you to put the performance improvement comments back in. Can you just run that tool again and do that? I said, Frank, we can do you one better. We can prevent developers from checking in unless they write performance improvements in their check-in comment. Once again, totally reasonable thing to be doing. So let's have a look at what we do here. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to write our own class, which implements the iSubscriber. And then there's two things we need to implement here. So one is the subscribed types property. So that tells TFS what messages we need to hear about. So we care about the check-in notification event. There's about 40 events. Actually, there's more than 40 events that you can subscribe to. But this is a useful one, check-in notification. And then that second chunk of code there, that's just one method signature. You don't have to worry too much about that. It will generate it when you implement that interface anyway. But this is the method that will get called when it's time for your plugin to execute its code. So this is the process event. It sends you a few things. There's a few out arguments as well. So you return a value, but you can also set a few things and so on. So the next thing we need to do inside this method is check our notification type. You know how I said that there was notifications and decision points? So we want to intercept the decision points. We'll actually get this firing twice. So we'll get it once when we can make a decision about it and once when there's a notification event. So we want the decision point because we want to affect what's going to happen. Just because I'm paranoid, I'm checking again that it is actually a check-in notification. I'm pretty sure that's redundant code, but I'm paranoid. And then I'm casting that argument that they've sent us to one of these check-in notification classes. So then I can work with it a bit more easily. And then we just do our work. Does this comment include performance improvement? If not, there's probably better ways of doing that. If not, then set the status message. This is one of these out arguments. And here's the important bit. Return event notification status.action denied. So that's the really important bit. We have the ability to prevent that check-in from occurring now. The other thing you have to do just at the end, and you'll never hear me say this about anything else, is you catch and swallow your exceptions. Don't ever do this anywhere else. But it turns out that if you start throwing exceptions from your plugin, TFS will just turn it off. Won't really tell you. Sure, you can check in the logs and things like that, but it'll just not work anymore. So log your exceptions and then swallow them. Yeah. The question was, does this work with Git repos? And yes, it does. So yes, even though you've committed locally, no. When you commit locally, it doesn't do anything with the Team Foundation server. Yeah, but when you push, it can. So you do get some of these events. There's a list of all of these different events you can subscribe to. The Git ones are still a little bit immature. There's only a few of them, but they're the big ones like push and pull and stuff like that you can subscribe to. So yes, yeah, absolutely. So log your event, swallow it. Log your exception, swallow it, and then action permitted at the end if nothing else happens. So this is what happens when you drop that assembly into the folder. Somebody checks in. They've got their comment of reworded error messages, which is a terrible comment. And it says, sorry, you can't check in without the words performance improvement, and it will reject their check-in. So we do this. Frank's very happy. The customers are saying it's performing much better. Thank you, Frank. All right, so the good things and bad things about server object model, and I'm aware I'm skipping over these quite quickly, and that's because we want to get to the fun stuff. Again, it's incredibly powerful. And it really allows you to change the behavior of TFS. So you could, in that check-in comment, go and check to make sure that somebody's done something else. I don't know. They're not allowed to check in at the end of the day unless they've filled in their timesheets. Maybe. I don't know. So it allows you to change what TFS does. And it allows you to respond to events as well. So when stuff happens, you can go and propagate that information somewhere else. So really powerful. Again, really dangerous. This lets you do so much stuff. If I'd written this wrong and just rejected every check-in, then you know you do that on production and you're not very productive. If nothing gets checked in. There's obviously some other events that have bigger impacts than that. The other thing is it's not available for Visual Studio Online, and that's because you have to have an assembly and you have to drop it in a folder, and there is no folder. This probably won't be coming. They're probably not going to give you access to a folder. And this isn't the way that they're going to let you do this kind of stuff. I'd keep an eye on the future for ways that you can intercept and change the behavior, but it won't be using the server object model if my guess is correct. I don't actually know that, but I would suggest it's not going to be. There are, again, some tricky coding hurdles, like that swallowing exceptions thing. If you don't know about that, then that can cause all sorts of problems. You can find yourself banging your head against the keyboard a bit. And once again, it's a little bit hard to find working examples. There is a lot of documentation on this as well, but you know what interfaces there are that you can implement and all that sort of stuff. Not the best source of working examples. All right, so I want to just, before we move on to the next stuff, the really cool stuff, I just want to talk about this gap between the two different stuff that I do. So I do web development, and Team Foundation Server. And if I'm writing code in the web development world, it's very different than writing it in the Team Foundation Server world, traditionally. So in the web development world, we have REST APIs, and we can use OAuth and all this great stuff like that. And it can be accessed anywhere that has an internet connection. My fridge can have a look at my website, which is a sensible thing to do. Whereas Team Foundation Server, you're dealing with hard DLL references. And yes, by the way, all of those assemblies that you can reference, there are NuGet packages that will just package them up for you, so you don't have to worry about hunting for them. But you're still working with hard DLL references. If you need to authenticate and you're not running the application as the current user, then you might have to impersonate a different user, and that can be quite painful. And you have kind of a restricted access. Like, you can't access this thing from your phone because you need a DLL to deploy, like, to actually talk to TFS. So it doesn't quite work as well. So about early this year, in general, Microsoft decided they were going to release these REST APIs and service hooks. And for me, that kind of bridged the gap. Now we can talk to TFS just over the web. So as a web developer who'd been working with Team Foundation Server and dealing with all these assembly references and stuff like this, this was like gold for me. This was like sent from heaven, this stuff. I can now use all of my web development skills to write stuff that talks to TFS. It was fantastic. So this is what I'm excited about, these REST APIs and these service hooks. So we're gonna have a look at these. REST APIs are the new way of reading and writing from TFS. Get information from TFS and send it to TFS. Basically, they're just RESTful services accessible over HTTP, HTTPS. So they're very web, you know, what are we up to? Web 3.0 something? I don't know. It uses JSON for data. So there's an example from their documentation. JSON's kind of your de facto standard for data transport over the web. They let you use basic authentication and OAuth 2. So again, kind of de facto standard OAuth 2 now for authenticating. And I've put a link there as well. This goes to the REST API, the Visual Studio Online REST APIs. So that's what they're still called at the moment because they're targeting Visual Studio Online. We'll talk about that in a sec. So that's those, the REST APIs. So in terms of what they can do, there's a huge amount of stuff that they can do. So that on the right, you can see that's a screenshot from the documentation page. And each one of those little blue links is not just one method that you can call, it's a collection of methods that you can call. So there's a lot of these. I haven't counted them because there's not a great way to count them. And this is being updated all the time. So a couple of weeks ago, that bottom one that has just a long string of blue ones, it was about half as long. So they just released a whole bunch more of these. And they're going to be improving them and releasing more and more. In general, you can do stuff with, you know, users, projects, teams, source control, with Git and Team Foundation version control, builds, testings, team rooms, all that kind of stuff. So most stuff that you want to do, particularly work items, you can run queries on work items and things like that as well. Very powerful. So Frank, he's very happy with our performance improvements, and now his customers are happy as well. But he has got the problem now where a lot of his customers are arguing about what functions should go in the application. So he wants a way of determining which ones are more popular, which backlog items are more popular, so he can tell the developers which ones to work on. But it's taking up a lot of his time. He's listening to these arguments and deciding. So he wants a way for the customers themselves to vote on what work items they want us to work on. So who has a phone with an internet connection at the moment? Can I just raise your hand? Oh, and is willing to help me? Oh, wow. Did everybody's hand go down? It's really easy, trust me. But I'm going to set this threshold very low then. All right, we've got a couple. I would encourage you to get out your phone because it's not that boring, trust me. So we wrote this website for Frank called the Community Backlog. And it lets us put in a couple of backlog items, set a threshold for votes, which is going to be low because nobody wants to help me. And we use this to connect to Team Foundation Server. When one of the items there hits enough votes, then we put that in the backlog and developers can start working on that immediately. So this is using the REST APIs under the cover, and it's using OAuth 2 as well. By the way, everything I'm showing you in terms of the code, even those snippets before and the stuff I'm showing you now, is all available on GitHub. I'll give you the links at the end. And that and a few more things that I don't have time to demo. All right, so we've got that one. We've got our Sport Portal website. So this is the website that Frank's got. I'm just using an image filler here called Phil Murray. Hang on. I don't know if you've seen it. It's just a Phil Murray, and you give it a size. It's great. It'll just give you an image back at that size. Anyway, so that's what he's got in there at the moment. But he's got his customers who are asking to put, why have you got like just this placeholder on there? This is a totally realistic scenario, by the way. Why have you got these placeholders on there? We want to see a sports person on there. So he's got his Australian and his New Zealand customers arguing about what should be on there. So we have an empty backlog at the moment. This is our sport portal website, backlog. There's nothing in there. And so we're going to put a couple of options in there. Now, let me know when I get to the threshold whether you'd like to participate now, because anyway, so we're going to put Sonny Bill Williams on the homepage. Or we're going to put Israel Folau on the homepage. Can I just see a show of hands of who's going to do this? Because I need to set a threshold. Hey, there we go. All right. We'll see how quickly we can get this done. All right. So our voting threshold, what do you reckon? Maybe, let's say 10. So when one of these gets 10 votes, I have no idea which way this is going to go, by the way. Then we're going to do that. So we're going to connect using OAuth. If you have connected things to like Twitter or Facebook before, you'll recognize this. You get this standard OAuth authorize thing. I'm going to say yes, that's fine. I'm already logged into Visual Studio, so you can see I'm already logged in. If not, it would ask me to log in and then ask me the question. I'll accept that. And it'll refresh and give me access to Team Foundation server. So here we can see it's asking me for the Visual Studio account that I want to use. So there's actually two of them. So I'm going to use my demo visa one. And then it's going to go away and get the team projects and then give me a list of those. So we're looking at the Sport Portal one. And then we want to create a product backlog item. Now there is actually an API that they just released, or they're just releasing soon. Sorry, it's not live yet, which will let me find out what product backlog items, what work items there are, but I'm not using that at the moment because it's not quite live. So what's going to happen when I click submit? It's going to give me a voting page. And I'd like anybody who has a phone to go to this, either go to this URL, or if you're close enough to a screen, wait. Just do that. And then we should see just at the bottom there, I'll flick that down when we start getting some votes. So what's going to happen when we actually get some votes coming in, hopefully, provided the internet works, is we're going to see these numbers tick up. There we go. People have started voting. So I might just collapse this when we get a few in. That's what? This is so one-sided. I'm shocked. I'm shocked and amazed. All right, great. Somebody's voted for Izzy. All right, so we got 8, a couple more. Oh, good work. 9, come on, one more. Kick it over. There we go, 10. So we've got Sonny Bill. Well, a couple of people got in after the threshold. Nice. Did you guys get errors, by the way, when you did that? Nope. Cool. So let's refresh our backlog. And we can see, once this reloads, that we now have a work item when the internet responds with Sonny Bill on the homepage. And we can see that there's a couple of things I want to show you here. We've got the title. All I did was set the title and the description. But if we have a look at the history of this work item, we can see that was done by me. And that's because I was the one who gave this application authorization using OAuth. So very, very standard web stuff. And it created this stuff. I'll show you a bit of this code. There's a lot in there, and it's in GitHub as well, so go and have a look at it in depth. But the things I want to show you, the account's URL here. So once I'm logged in, I can hit that URL, and it will give me the list of accounts that I have access to. So I'll just show you. If I hit that URL, it's going to dump back a whole lot of JSON in there, which is great. But you're writing C#, right? You're not dealing with JSON objects, you're using C# objects. So I want to show you a little tip that has saved me about a million hours of coding. Copy, so you highlight all of that JSON, you copy it. And in here, we'll just add a new model. Where are we? Add class. Class 1 is the name that I want. Oh, look at that. Class 1, we'll delete that. And then we'll go edit. paste special, paste JSON as classes. Look at that. The amount of time that I spent, the amount of time that I spent copying these things and putting JSON arguments and stuff like that. I'll get rid of that. We don't need it. And the good thing about that is when you're starting to write this, because a lot of people will say, is there an API that I can talk to? You say, well, no, it's web. You just use the objects that it gives you back. And that's all well and good, but then you have to go and type these objects out, so you don't have to here. Just as an example, like the projects I was looking at, the documentation, which is what that link went to, it gives you all the details about what you can call, and then it gives you a sample response. So you can copy all of that and paste it as a class in your project. So you don't even have to worry about testing it first and hitting URLs and things like that. So it's actually really quick to start using this stuff. The only other thing which is of relevance is how you do the authentication stuff. I won't go through OAuth because OAuth in general is a horrible thing to work with. It'll work fine. It's a web standard. There's solutions out there very easily. But the way you actually do this is I'm just getting the URL here, and then I'm calling my getWithBearer expecting an accounts object, which is one of these pasted objects, giving it the URL, and then my OAuth access token. So this is what you get when you do OAuth. The definition of that, it creates an HTTP client and adds two new headers. So there's an accept header, like what media do we want? And we're saying we expect JSON back, thanks. This isn't actually required. You saw I did this in the browser, and I'm certainly not saying I accept JSON from my browser, but it's a good practice to get into, just in case they will also return stuff as XML. And then you add an authentication or an authorization header of type bearer, and you pass in the access token. And after that, it's standard web stuff. You hit that URL, you make sure you get a successful status code, and then you interpret the contents as the class that you expect, and it'll deserialize. That read as async of type T as well, that is an extension method that belongs to the web API client library, which is in NuGet. So that saves you a lot of time of actually manually doing your deserialization or doing it explicitly through JSON.NET or something like that. So that's pretty handy as well. Cool. Any questions about that code briefly? Nothing? Straightforward? Have a look at it on GitHub later. Send me a pull request because I know there's a couple of little tricky things that I haven't got right in there. This is what we just did. So we did that, and Frank is really happy. So is the Kiwi, and the Australian is not so happy. So once again, pros and cons of using the REST APIs. The biggest pro for me is it's so accessible. My fridge that could visit websites, it can also participate in this. I can vote for Israel from my fridge. This is where Microsoft is putting a lot of their investment in integration with TFS. So yes, the client object model and the server object model are still working, but they're putting their effort into the REST APIs. I actually asked Brian Harry about whether, we asked him point blank, if you were to write that Team Explorer, the extension on Windows Explorer again from scratch today, would you use the client object model, which is what it currently uses, or would you use the REST APIs and just make sure there are APIs for everything it does? And he didn't even hesitate. He said we would use REST APIs. So if you need any kind of indication of which way they're heading, you know, that's pretty solid. That's what they're going to do. Again, it's modern technology. This is what the web generally does. And so for all these reasons, it's a great way to go. The downsides are it is still in preview. If you saw that documentation page before, there's a big bar at the top that says this is still in preview. And what that means is while it is actually quite stable, it can change. They are versioning major changes, though, but just be aware it is still in preview. It is not quite available for on-premises. So I don't quite know whether I'm going to get in trouble for this, but if you're running Team Foundation Server 2013.3 on your local, like on-premises server, just have a go at hitting similar URLs to the Visual Studio Online stuff. Just, you know, who knows what would happen. That's all I'll say. The documentation, because everything's still in preview, the documentation is in preview. So there have been a few occasions over the last few months where you follow what's in the documentation online letter by letter and it doesn't work. And it's because there's a little bit of a mismatch between the implementation and the documentation. It hasn't happened for a while, so they're definitely cleaning that up. And by the time it gets to the live production stuff, it'll be solid. But just be aware, because it's preview, there's a couple of things that can occasionally go wrong. All right, before I move on to service hooks, any questions about the REST APIs? Nope. Cool. Let's move on. So service hooks were released about the same time as the REST APIs, and they give us the ability to be notified when stuff happens in our Team Foundation server in Visual Studio Online. So these are event-driven notifications from TFS. So when I say TFS, this is the broad term for Team Foundation Server or Visual Studio Online. In this case, it's Visual Studio Online. There's a lot of out-of-the-box options for integrating with third-party applications, third-party websites. So when you go and select a target for your integration, you can choose a few of them out of the box. The other thing which is really cool is configuring these service hooks can be done using the REST APIs. Which means if I was to extend that voting tool, the community backlog, so that it would, what would it do? It'd send you an email using service hooks, for example, or hit another URL using service hooks once that vote got over its threshold, I could set up that subscription using the REST APIs as well. So you never have to actually use the UI if you don't want to. I've got a link there which doesn't actually go to the documentation. It goes to a blog post which will point to the documentation. Not my blog post, somebody from Microsoft, and they walk through how to set one up. It's much more useful than straight documentation. So the things that you can integrate with out of the box, so when you create a new one, and we'll show you in a sec, when you create a new one, these are the things you can integrate with out of the box. The ones I'm going to look at in particular are webhooks and Zapier. Webhooks, simply because I'm a developer, this gives you the most power. Zapier, does anybody know of Zapier? No, one or two people? Has anybody heard of if this, then that? No, that's probably not a great analogy to use then. So what both of these tools do is they basically give you an interface that's really basic that says, when this thing happens, do this thing. And it connects two different services together. So I'll show you what Zapier can do, but it will connect Visual Studio Online using service hooks, and it will do something in another service somewhere else. So I'll show you that. Webhooks is kind of your raw basic thing that you can do. When something happens in TFS or in Visual Studio Online, it will hit a URL with the data in the body. So it'll just do a post, which means that you can have your own application pick up that post, parse the data, and do whatever you want. So those are the two that I'll show you. So Frank's back. Frank has decided this is fantastic, but we keep finishing all these tasks and he doesn't know about it. So he gets customers calling up and saying in their Australian accent, why is Israel Folau not on the front page? I thought you told me that you were going to do that. So he wants to at least be aware when we finish those tasks, right? So we're going to use the service hooks to hook up a couple of notifications for him. So I have to do a couple of things here. One is swap things. I'm going to turn up my mobile phone, which is a weird thing to do in a demo. All right, so let's have a look. Oh, wrong one. Let's have a look here at our backlog. We've got our backlog. So to set up your service hooks using the UI, you administer the account, and you can see there'll be a tab that comes up for service hooks. A little asterisk there means it's in preview as well. So it warns you all over the place. Service hooks in preview. Can everybody read that okay? Yep, cool. So we can see there's already one set up with Zapier. If I try to edit that here, it's going to tell me, look, this is being managed by Zapier itself. You need to use Zapier to edit it. So we'll do that first, and there's a good reason for that. So let's have a look at this. Zapier calls them Zaps, and this is a connection from Visual Studio Online to Clickatell. So Clickatell is just an SMS gateway. It's just something that Zapier will connect to. If you want to know what kind of stuff Zapier will connect to, here's a drop-down of all the different services you can use from Zapier. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what stuff you can do in response to Visual Studio events. So what we're going to say is when a work item is updated, which is what happens when it gets moved to done, we're going to send a new SMS. Now, I've already connected to Visual Studio Online using OAuth, and I've already connected to Clickatel. They actually use username and password, which is horrible, but that works. So those are already connected. I'm going to say only trigger an update work item event, so only do this thing when our Sport Portal project has a change in the area path of Sport Portal, which is kind of our base one. This is optional. And a work item type changes as well. So when a product backlog item changes and the state field of that work item changes. So these are the things that are in the service hooks options already. Zapier actually gives you the ability to add additional custom filters. So we can say when our system state exactly matches done, then fire this, then run this thing. Otherwise, don't worry about it. So we put in our number. I've left that one blank for the moment. And we can say, send this message. The work item and the title is finished. And we can insert fields from TFS as well. So there's all of these fields. So this comes from the JSON message that Visual Studio will send, or Visual Studio Online will send. So there's a lot of stuff there. You can put a from in there and a default country code. These are Clickatel things. You can test it, and then you can name it and turn it on. Now, it's not going to let me save this because I've made changes, and it tries to be really, really smart, and it will leave that one open. So I've got to kill that. This is all fine once you set it up. I'm going to kill that. This one has my mobile number in it, so I'm going to turn that on. And I knew that would happen. Turn it back on. Okay, just bear with me for 2 seconds. I'm just going to make sure that's actually on. Just talk amongst yourselves. So the there we go. My mobile number is in there. You'll have to forgive me that I don't want to publicise my mobile number to everybody. All right, so we've got that. We've saved that. That's fine. The other thing we want to do, just to show you what happens here, is I want to use a little tool called Request Bin. Has anybody used that before? No, it's basically just a little thing. If you hit it with an HTTP request from anywhere, then it'll just show you what those are later on. So we'll create one and then use that. So if we hit that URL, it'll record that HTTP request, whatever it is, and it'll show us later on. So let's create a new webhook. So I'm going to create a new subscription. I'm going to scroll down to webhooks. So these are the different events that we can use. We can fire this thing when a build's completed, code's checked in, team room messages are posted, work items update, and things like that. And the actions that we can do in response are we can just post fire an HTTP. There are a few others like Jenkins, Hubot, HipChat, which will post a message to a room, all this sort of stuff. And Zapier, obviously, if you try to do that, it'll tell you to set it up there. But we're going to use a webhook. We're going to hit a URL. We're going to do it when we've already got an SMS for that, so I'm going to do it when code's checked in. Change your demo live. Good idea, Damien. So we're going to post via HTTP. We're going to post to that request bin URL. We can put other stuff in there, so if we need specific HTTP headers so we can identify it or something like that, or authentication, we're going to send all the details. You can send subsets of details as well. And you can version these as well. So you can say, I want this version of the API or this version of the data versus another one. So while they're updating these things, there'll be different versions there. And then we're going to finish. So what should happen when I check in this code to do this work, it should hit that request bin. So we should be able to see it when we go back to this page. The other thing that it will do, when we move that task to done, it will then send me an SMS if everything works correctly. Now, the free version of Zapier apparently only checks every 15 minutes. So we have less than 15 minutes left in this talk. Let's hope that I get an SMS in time. All right, so let's do the work. Currently using Phil Murray. We don't want to do that. We want to use, pretty sure, Sunny Bill 1. So let's just comment that one out. Oops, that's not the right one. There we go. And we'll save that, and like a true hardcore developer, I'm not even going to run it or test it. I'm just going to check it in. I should obviously put that work item ID in as well. So really, I should be going to my work. It's not even associated to me. Oh, there we go. Let's just do it as 42. Very fitting. Where are we? Pending changes. We're going to add 42. Fantastic. And then we are going to check in. Now, I've set up continuous integration as well. So in the background, that'll go and update the stuff. So when I checked in that code, let's have a look at what it did. So if we refresh this request bin, we should see that there's a request that's been made by Visual Studio Online in response to that check-in. So we can see it's a post, and here's all the data. Once again, copy that, paste JSON as classes, and you have now a rich class tree of exactly what's there. We can see my comment, my change set comment. We can see all sorts of other stuff here, like the linked ID, 42, the linked work item ID. So we can do a ton of stuff with this. You know, this gives us a lot of information about it. How are we going with our support portal? Not there yet. Just while that's refreshing. Oh, there we go. No, it's just giving me a different Bill Murray. Good. So now we've done this work, let's just move that guy to done. Oh, or not, because there's rules. I have to go through approved. I'm going to commit it now, and now I'm going to do done. This is what everybody does, right? All right. So how are we going? I'm just going to keep refreshing that every now and then. So we've got that in there. So what that should have done is it should have sent a message to... oh, there we go. That should have sent a message to Zapier saying, hey, you got this thing done. So here's my, I've got this really high-tech document scanner. Come on, focus. There we go. The work item put Sunny Bill on the homepage is finished. There we go. So I got an SMS in response to that. I got an SMS in response to that event happening, right? And we can see that in our service hooks. If we refresh this page, I'd obviously been testing this before, so there were four occasions when that had occurred. We can see when this comes back. Oh, it's gone and screwed me up while I was doing all my testing. All right, so we can see it succeeded. There's a failure here when the old one was there. This is Zapier being weird with me having multiple windows open. But we got that occurring. We got that SMS happening. And we can see what information was sent. This is with the check-in, but we could do that with the with that item as well. All right. Pretty cool. So we've done that. Now he's got a little green light up on his phone, and he can preempt these arguments from his Australian customers. So good things and bad things with this. This is awesome for integration. So awesome for integration with your own apps. Again, this is where Microsoft is investing a lot of their energy, and it's modern technology and all that sort of stuff. This works for Visual Studio Online too, where the server object model didn't support Visual Studio Online. So this is the way to do it with Visual Studio Online. Downsides, it's still in preview. You can't do it in on-premises yet, and unlike the REST APIs where you might try to do some of this stuff, there's no UI for this. I haven't actually tried doing it using the REST APIs, but I suspect that's not going to work until they formally release it, but it'll be soon. The other downside is it's notification only. You can't change anything as a result of this. It's only this thing happened, do your own stuff. And once again, documentation is in preview. It's not hugely thorough, but it is quite good. The other thing is there's a few little integration limitations. So if you're doing things like Trello is one integration that's out of the box. You can respond to, when the state changes, create a ticket, or create a card, I think it is, in Trello. But when that state changes to active, it'll create a card. When you change it to committed, it'll create a card. There's no option to update an existing card or something like that. So there's a couple of little limitations there. If you're not running the latest Visual Studio as well with the notification stuff, then there's other things you can do with the alerts that would normally send you an email. If you switch that to SOAP, you can actually handle those events. I wouldn't recommend you do it. I recommend you wait until these are live, but you can do it if you really want to. All right, so we looked at notifications using server object model and service hooks, interception using the server object model, reading and writing using client object model and the REST APIs. For some more information, there's a shameless plug. And by the way, I think one person asked a question before, so is that you? There we go. Come and grab this at the end. Chapter 27. The rest of you should totally buy it because I get a few cents each time. There's a link to the MSDN articles, so all of this stuff about the integration. The object models, so server and client object models, the REST API documentation, which is really quite good, and the service hooks, that blog post that will link you to more documentation, and also there's the code. I will also tweet that after this as well, so you have it on an electronic device rather than just in your brains. So there's two GitHub repositories there. There's the community backlog, which is that whole thing with OAuth and all that sort of stuff. And then there's just these TFS integration ones as well, which is all the little, the server object model, the client object model, and then a few others that I've got in there as well that use basic authentication with REST APIs and stuff. So have a look. There's a few samples in there. But yes, I will tweet that. I understand a lot of people are taking photos. In terms of related content, just waiting for a photo. In terms of related content, there was another really good session on Wednesday, which will be on Channel 9 from Rami, who's sitting over there, who did this same kind of stuff with service hooks, except he lit up lights and lava lamps and stuff like that on response to build events, which is really cool. And I'm kind of glad I didn't have to put my toes into hardware, leave that to the experts. Otherwise, you can find me later at the Hub or on Twitter. And now, time to go and get some lunch or come up with any questions. Thanks, guys.